Marcus Thompson joining me. His book is Golden, The Miraculous Rise of Steph Curry. And I think people forget a lot of times that, it's been a couple years, a couple MVPs, that this is a miraculous story. He is not somebody who fits the mold, who fits the profile of someone who should succeed in the NBA for a lot of reasons. When you were going through and researching this, how much about his pre-NBA career did you already know, just being a writer out there and covering him on a daily basis? What was something maybe that stuck out to you the most out of something that you learned from his life before the Warriors?
So, you know some of it, right? You know the story about him being not recruited, and et cetera. What I didn't know was that a lot of the traits that kind of define his game now were already there. And it was really, it was fun to hear, like, the people from that era tell those stories. You know, it was unique that Steph is like a 12-year-old, was the same dude. And, like, they kind of saw this in him. Like, if you were around him, you saw something special in him. I don't think they knew he would be this, but, like, in doing the research, you realize he really actually was a prodigy. He was just, like, trapped in this little body. So nobody even noticed it.
Well, and even as he's added some bulk and kind of turned into a guy who looks like an NBA player, as opposed to when he was at Davidson and his jersey was just hanging off of him like they got it at the sales rack, the XXL that's way too big for his frame. You know, he still has the baby face. He is the baby face assassin. You know, the nickname. Is that, do you think that puts people off, that they just assume because of how he presents that he isn't this guy who you've discovered that he actually is?
I think no question at all, right? That's the jarring part of it. It's, you know, when you, especially like when you step on a basketball court, like whether you're playing pickup, right, or a game, if you see a dude who's like 6'5" and he's in shape and he's got on like cool shoes and basketball shorts, you just automatically assume he can play. And then if he can't play, you're like, oh, man, you garbage. I thought you were good. Well, Steph is like the opposite of that, right? You assume he can't play, and then he has to prove you wrong. So I think that's what he's kind of developed, this babyface assassin persona, by constantly having to prove people wrong, by disprove how he looks. And then you throw on top of that, like, he's got this whole family good guy image, right? Clean. He goes to church. That really, like, takes away some of that inherent credibility. So he's been fighting all his life for people to say, yeah, man, you could play. I respect that. And it's created an edge that you really don't expect them to have.
You know, I wonder how much of it, when you don't live in the Bay Area, you know, I mean, I watch Warriors games when I have a chance to, but I see mostly nationally covered games. You know, unless NBA TV picks something up, it's the national coverage, and especially Charles Barkley has always stood out the last few years as this sort of constant critic who, oh, well, they're a jump shooting team, and he's just a shooter, and yeah, he's a great shooter, but it's this sort of discrediting of the style of basketball, and that they aren't deserving champions. Even after they won, there was still these hedges about, they got lucky, other teams were hurt, this and this. There was always some reason why. I'm curious, you know, from your perspective, how much of that do you get balanced against what you see in the Bay Area as far as this perception that they haven't earned somehow their championship, and especially after this last year with them having such a great year but then not finishing it out? What is that perception like? Do you sense that there's that national level of disrespect?
Without question, right? It was really unique from the Bay Area perspective because for so long, like, the Warriors weren't even in this mix, right? It was like they just were a terrible franchise. A championship wasn't even on the radar. And, like, you watch other teams and, like, all you could hope was, like, one day the Warriors would be like that, right? That's kind of the sentiment. And people would come to games to look at the other great players. And the Warriors, like, never really stacked up. So the part that was odd, and we've heard this in the Bay Area for years, this is like a major complaint by Warriors fans, is when the Warriors finally get a team that really earns the, you know, or is good enough to be at this level, like, nobody wants to give it the credit, right? So that's the part that's unique. It's like, what Steph has done, really, is pretty significant. He took a franchise that was universally terrible and irrelevant and turned it into a champion. And just that whole rags-to-riches story alone is, you know, it's still sensational out here. But nationally, it's like, wow. Like, so what will it take then? What will it take for the national perspective to say, yeah, man, that we really like what happened out there in Golden State. We really like what Steph did. Because, and that's just really what happened, was that it was a rags-to-riches story and they got too rich. So there was supposed to be some kind of, like, limit on that, I guess. And people don't like how rich they got so suddenly.
I feel like, and Warriors fans are guilty of this too. I'm guilty of this on some level. They're after, you know, during last year when it was just, it was incredible. They were on record pace the whole time. They won the first 20 some odd games of the season. People started finding new ways to make it not about Steph. It was, oh, Draymond Green's the best player on his own team, even if Steph's the MVP or whatever it was. And, you know, people ask me, oh, well, who's your favorite player? And I love the Sean Livingston story. And so, like, I'm always rooting for Sean Livingston. But I feel like we sometimes take away the credit from Steph for, we sort of take him for granted almost. It's like, well, Steph's going to be Steph, and he's going to shoot 50% from three, and he's going to score 28 points. But I'm really interested in these other stories that are going on. Do we kind of take that transcendence for granted sometimes? You think that he's almost made it so commonplace a lot that we forget just how impressive what he does is?
I think not only we do it, but the Warriors do it, right? I think Steve Kerr did it this year. Like, all the emphasis was on, like, infiltrating Durant and getting him comfortable and, you know, kind of, you know, making sure he was happy. And then they forgot about Steph. It's like, wait a second, the two-time MVP, right? The two-time MVP can't be forgotten about unless we got to get him in offense. I think that is the case. I think part of it is because Steph doesn't, like, demand that, right? He doesn't say, you better respect me. He's not out here clamoring for the attention. And, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So he's kind of easy to overlook in that way or take for granted until he, you know, like, makes you give it to him. I definitely think we take it for granted. And really, truly, I don't think we'll fully appreciate it until later, until down the line when this like, segment is gone. And now you can look back at it with, like, some form of nostalgia.
Well, and you mentioned Kevin Durant. Obviously, with him coming in, that the whole dynamic changes. He got hurt in the game out here in D.C. And, you know, I've been watching, you know, here and there. It didn't feel like they had quite the same energy most nights, quite the same magnetism that they'd had the last couple of years. Durant goes down. The team is sort of a slightly reduced version of what it had been the last couple of years, obviously without Harrison Barnes and Bogut. But I mean, back to that, you know, it's revolving around Curry and revolving around the Splash Brothers. It seemed like they really kind of refound their identity. Now they're folding Durant back in. How do you kind of sense where this team is going into the playoffs right now with Durant just a couple games back?
I think they ended up where they wanted to, even though, like, the journey wasn't how they expected it. You know, one of the things the Warriors learned this year that LeBron probably knows very well, that once you play till June, when you start playing till June every year or being expected to play till June every year, like, it's really hard to get up for the regular season. Like, it just, the whole 82-game process just takes on a different tone. So in their first year, they were trying to prove they were worthy, right? And in the second year, they were trying to validate their championship. And now they're like, you know, man, we just need to win a championship. And I feel like they tried, especially Steve Kerr, early they wanted to, like, get the 73-74 out of the conversation. They didn't want that coming up again. And the whole emphasis was, let's be concerned about how we're playing in March and April and going into the playoffs, and let's peak at the right time. And in the end, they ended up here. Like, even after the Durant injury, What he did was, now you got Steph in rhythm without him. You got Clay in rhythm. They kind of found that mojo, and now they get to plop Durant into that. So I feel like they ended up right where they wanted to be, And it didn't look like they would get there. And Durant does need to get his conditioning in right. Needs to kind of find a rhythm, but that's the first round because they're not going to lose the first round, right? So he'll get a chance to kind of get his mojo back in the first round. So really, by the Western Conference Finals, when it's supposed to get real, they should be at peak Warriors.
Yeah, it seemed almost kind of like a blessing in disguise, and certainly when he went down in that game in Washington, you know, they struggled in that game. But by the time the Wizards got back out to Oakland, you could see the difference in terms of how far they'd come in adjusting without Durant. I got to ask you, because we're both East Bay guys, you wrote a column in January, which stuck out to me because I'm grappling with a lot of the same stuff. Talking about the impending move, and it was the groundbreaking of the new arena in San Francisco, and how you were boycotting it, and you didn't want to be there. Do you feel just as an East Bay guy, just personally, like you is there any more kind of urgency from your end to wanting to see them win in the next couple of years before they leave? Because I don't know, like it's not going to be quite the same as your team anymore. It's going to be a team that plays here, but it's not like an Oakland team anymore.
So most of me kind of feels like this is like what you know, what Warriors fans have longed for. Like, you've got it now. Whether they win, you know, two championships over the next 4 years or three straight, whatever. But the fact is, they are elites, right? They are contenders, and that was the goal. So I feel like the East Bay is already getting like the best of it, right? They won't win a championship every year, but if they get two, you know, they're supposed to go in 2019, right? If they get one of these next two, they'll have two championships and five straight years of being contenders. Like, that's, man, Warriors fans would have taken that a long time. Like, 10 years ago, that would have been great. So, but there is this sense of, like, we were with you while you were ugly, and now that you're pretty, you know, you go to San Francisco.
Right.
So when I wrote that, like, there's a lot of people who've been feeling that way, and I just felt like somebody needs to give that a voice, because it's all celebratory. It's all, wow, new stadium is coming, and everything is great. But there is a segment, like, I can't believe, like, they're going to leave the East Bay. They're going to leave Oakland. They're going to leave, like, the hardcore grassroots, I knew you before you was, you know, you were big time fan base. Now the Warriors don't see it that way, but many people feel that way. The Warriors see it as, man, we just going across the street, relax. You can go to the game still. But there was something about where the team is located and the type of like fan that location draws that it is personal, and it does feel like, you know, you're an East Bay guy. There's a civil war of sorts between San Francisco and Oakland, East Bay and West Bay. One is the big brother, one is the little brother. So the Warriors chose the big brother, and of course the little brother is going to have feelings about that.
Yeah, well, and, you know, Oracle was always a great place to watch a game, even when the team was bad. I mean, and especially when the team would be good in little spurts, I mean, 07, 08, like, it was this incredible hometown kind of, you know, home court advantage and atmosphere, and always considered one of the toughest places to play. I wonder if some of that magic that kind of, you know, incubated and raised this group, if that's going to be lost, just even if it's a great arena, even if it's noisy or whatever, there's a sense that, to me at least in advance, that some of that is going to just go away as they cross the bay. I don't know. Do you sense that in your conversations?
No, there's some real, like, serious concerns about that within the Warriors organization. There are some people, they won't say it because, you know, they have to all speak the same thing and be on message. And, you know, and Joe Lacob's big thing is, like, be excited and positive, right? And we're gung-ho. But that is a concern, to the point that they, like, acoustics is part of the design, right? They're going to do what they can to make sure it stays loud. But to be honest, like, you can already see the change. Like, the crowd that's there now is not the We Believe crowd from 07. It's a lot more. First off, the tickets are like five times more expensive. So, like, they're the you know, the people who don't have those means and who probably might be a little bit more rabid, they aren't there as much. You know, especially in the lower bowl, it's Silicon Valley. It's people with a T-shirt over a tie and shirt, right? They put that yellow T-shirt over their tie.
Right.
There's already a sense of it's different. And people talk about that like it's not the same Oracle. You know, you see fans leaving early. If, you know, if it's 3 minutes left and they're losing, you start seeing people walking out the aisle. You used to see that at Oracle. So it's different now. The question is, does it get worse? Because the stadium is smaller. They've shrunk from 20,000 to 18, which means the tickets are probably going to be even higher. Like, so does it get worse? Does it get better? Like, we don't know. But they have the rise from, you know, hopeful grassroots, trendy team to supervillain on top of the world has already shown a shift in you know, that kind of cool vibe, that homegrown vibe that Oracle had.
Well, whether they if they make it back to the finals, whether they get the Cavs or if they're out here against the Wizards, hopefully nobody be leaving early, at least for playoff games, and We can see this.
Nah, not for playoff games.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for the Wizards, though. Like, after 2 years in Cleveland, like, give me a D.C. Give me 2 weeks in D.C. I'm with that.
It would be fantastic, and this town could certainly use a team finally making a championship. It's been far too long out here as well. So, looking forward to it. The book, once again, is Golden, The Miraculous Rise of Steph Curry. He's Marcus Thompson. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, and go buy all these books to prepare for the John Wall-Steph Curry showdown in the finals.